Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
But let's dig right in on what we saw last night. If you get HBO, if you watch Hard Knocks, you probably have either watched it or did the HBO Go thing and watched some of it. But that's not everybody. To those who didn't, there were two or three things that took place with the Cleveland Browns. It was Dez Bryant's visit and an unknown, or previously unknown, assistant coach. And their offensive line coach, actually, and I'm making his presence known in somewhat comedic fashion. The guy's name is Bob Wiley. Bob Wiley is 67 years old. He's originally from Warwick, Massachusetts. He went to Roger Williams College, and he is one of those classic football lifers. Don't believe me? Bob Wiley got into coaching. Got into college coaching in 1980, right? In 1980. So he had been bouncing around and coaching, I think, high school football. Coaches at Brown on their offensive line coach, Holy Cross, Ohio U, Colorado State, with the New York Jets, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Cincinnati Bengals, the Chicago Bears, the Arizona Cardinals, Syracuse, in the Canadian Football League with Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, the Denver Broncos, the Oakland Raiders, back to Winnipeg, and now with the Cleveland Browns. He's also an amateur musician and an amateur magician. He's got a daughter and a grandson, and he's a licensed pilot. And if you had to go to Central Casting and find and say, what does a 67-year-old lifer in the NFL offensive line coach look like and sound like? It would be this guy. Here's Bob Wiley watching the Cleveland Browns stretch and warm up one day and longing for the days gone past.
World War I, World War II, all those guys that fought in that war, right? They did push-ups, jumping jacks, sit-ups, climbed the rope and ran. But none of this fancy, okay? Right? And they won two world wars. Two world wars by doing jumping jacks, push-ups, and sit-ups. Two world wars. You think they were worried when they're running across Normandy about stretching? Are you kidding me?
A few people might have pulled a hammy.
Well, let me see. Give me my rubber band so I can stretch to run across that beat. You got to be kidding me.
It is funny, right? That it's a lot like coaches get paralysis by analysis. Players get paralysis, you know, by technology. You know, I can't coach. I can't go yet. I'm not stretched yet. I haven't been stretched yet. All right, well, so just go ahead and run and warm up and stretch. Well, I need my bands. I need my T-band rollers. That's what I need. I need my bands and my T-band rollers, coach. It was amazing. Amazing television. So, look, did he know he was mic'd up? Probably, but I think there's a certain realness to it. And real is what Dez Bryant searched for. Dez Bryant came down an escalator, headphones on, spiritual gangster shirt, shorts. But that was the same gear he wore when he got to the Cleveland Browns facility. He walked around and said, what's good, what's good? Dapping everybody, giving everybody shugs, trying to be friendly, Dez, saying hi to dudes playing video games. By the way, don't ever disturb me when I'm playing a video game. Going into the equipment room, walking around. And then he walked in and met with Hugh Jackson. Here's a little bit of the back and forth.
What are you looking for, Dez?
I'm just looking for realness. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm. Cause this new to me. Right. Just being honest. All this new. The way, just being honest. The way you expressing yourself, uh-huh. The way you talking to me. Mm-hmm. I barely know each other and right. I feel comfortable.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, that's what these players want. I want to just be honest with you.
Right.
I just want that realness.
Yeah, I think he blew the interview. Look, I do like the idea that he said there's still more to learn. Who doesn't like that from an older veteran employee? Somebody comes in to meet with our radio bosses who's been around on a couple of tours, and everyone does think they know stuff because they travel, they've done it. No one wants to hear a know-it-all. But when you're surrounded by a team, especially one that has a lot of burgeoning young talent like the Browns do, especially at wide receiver, they also want a mentor, not necessarily a mentee. I don't know whether this is just too soon, right? It's too soon for Dez to be on a job interview. He's still hurt by the Dallas Cowboys sending him on his way. Don't believe me? Go look at his Twitter page going back just 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the idea that any human being who's been around professional sports would walk into a job interview or would get off a plane for a job interview. And look, you get off a plane, you got headphones on, you're watching a movie on your iPod, on your iPad. I get it. You got a nice bag, put the headphones in the bag. You don't have to have a suit and a tie. You don't have to look like Cam Newton post-game. But you mean to tell me you couldn't throw on a polo? You couldn't throw on some slacks? It's a job interview. I mean, I just, you know, dress for the job that you want. Look, I work in the greatest industry ever, right? It just really is. It's not always the best paying industry in comparison to others. You know, like finance guys just kill it. Finance guys now are what doctors and lawyers were when we grew up. If your dad was a doctor or a lawyer, you usually had a three-car garage house. You know, now it's like finance guys rule the world. Or commercial real estate. And dudes that own stuff or finance stuff or stocks and bonds for the most part, like that, those are the guys that are killing it. But I do work in an industry to which I know, if I go to Midtown Manhattan, everybody in Midtown Manhattan in the middle of winter wears a coat and a tie, and you're like, eh. And in the heat of summer, they wear slacks and a button down. And in radio, like, look, man, in radio, you show up, if you're not on TV, shorts and a t-shirt, sometimes I don't even wear shorts. But if I'm going to meet with my bosses, even in an industry as casual as radio, I'm going to throw on a collared shirt. And if I'm going to go for a job interview, damn, I'm going to do a little bit better than that. This to me was nothing more than, I think that Dez doesn't want to go to the Browns because having been a Cowboy his entire career, they always look down on a team like the Browns. It's a lot like Dukies look down on the state schools in Carolina and Kentucky. You look down on, but at some point you got to swallow your pride and you just go do it. Just go talk to the guy about the job. But between still being kind of caught in the picking out the shrapnel of the relationship gone bad to Dallas, all the way to not really answering the questions and understanding what to ask and how to be seen, but just down to how you dress. I'm sure you guys have seen this, right? Or heard this, where women make a determination if they're going to, you know, in like the first 30 seconds they meet you. It's the same thing with when you're going to be hired. You walk into a room and there's just an aura about guys like, I want to hire that guy. I don't know what Adrian Peterson wore when he went to meet the Washington Redskins. I'm guessing it wasn't a spiritual gangster cut off t-shirt and headphones. And I do know that spiritual gangster, it's like a workout shirt. You wear it when you do, you know, do soul cycle or you do hot yoga. And look, if I had arms like Dez Bryant, I would never wear a shirt with sleeves either. But you couldn't even take off the headphones? Really? Really? Joel Klatt's going to join us upcoming in a little bit here on the show. Joel Klatt, of course, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. I am going to ask him about Hard Knocks. I'm going to ask him about who's the Jim Wyatt that he played for in college during his travels. Everybody's got a coach that was a lot like Coach Wyatt, who had some bizarre story, some funny way of doing it. But, man, I watched this thing and I sit there and go, I really want. I want desperately for Dez Bryant to be in the National Football League. But man.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Channing Frye, of course, who's a friend of a friend. Like, I know I'm close with a bunch of Arizona guys who all swear by him. And then I got friends who are his neighbors in Portland, former neighbors in Portland. There's actually something called the LeBron Wire on USA Today. They sat down with Channing Frye. I'm going to read you the quote in its entirety and then kind of decipher it for you. Quote, I think they being the Lakers, are going to come into, and I think a lot of guys are going to have to deal with this. There's who you expect to be and then who you are when you play with LeBron. It's two different things. I don't know if they truly understand what it's like to play with him because there's no room for mistakes. Because in all actuality, he could do it himself. He could lead a team to 40 wins by himself. I think all of them, they are going to have a reality check. Not only them, but the people around them. They're going to say, not a growing period, but a humility. The Lakers last year, they established how they're going to play. Going to play really fast, going to play together, going to play defense. But now you've got LeBron, now you've got Rondo, you got all these guys. People are like, yo, we're trying to beat the S out of you guys now. Everybody is not like, hey, let's go party in LA now. It's let's stay in and get some sleep because think about it. Every team that beats the Lakers is going to be on ESPN regardless of how good they are. If you have a good game against the Lakers, you're going to be on ESPN the next 2 days. Hottest news every game. So get ready for that. Get ready for all the attention that comes with LeBron, all the responsibilities. Get ready to try and deal with getting popular and getting invited to everything. If you have a million followers, get ready to have two. If you have two, get ready to have four. Get ready to get invited to literally everything in LA because you're the hottest ticket in LA. Find that medium. He also went on to talk about how LeBron James establishes what role you are. Let's first start with the first part. I said this when I hosted Colin Cowherd. I've said this on this show. The idea that the world occurs in a vacuum, that all NBA games are the same, is laughable. They're not the same. Sometimes you get ready to go, and these games at the end of the season, the stats get skewed because some teams are trying to lose, and maybe they're not trying to lose. They don't care about winning. They play younger players. And then there are teams that they just don't care about winning, and so guys know that. They go and they get there, and they go out on the road. Like, man, we got the... Pick the team. Actually, we got the Suns. I'm going to Scottsdale tonight. We got a game tomorrow. Like, yeah, we got the Suns. We'll be fine. You know, like I've been in Milwaukee in my apartment every night. I get in. Now we're in Phoenix. It's warm. I'm going to stay out, have some drinks, enjoy myself. Yeah, I got the Suns. I'll take a nap in the middle of the day tomorrow. Everybody is gunning for you. Duke players talk about this all the time. Like, guys in my position, we discuss, hey, Duke doesn't play true road games in the non-conference. They play these made-for-TV non-conference games in place like Cameron Square Garden. The one thing about Duke, though, that they experience that other people do not, Kentucky gets this too, but not as much, Carolina does as well, is everybody gives you their best effort. It doesn't matter if it's a guarantee game in November against McNeese State or if it's in January against Kansas. You're Duke, you walk in, and Coach K is your coach. And though Johnny Dawkins isn't walking through that door, neither is Grant Hill or Christian Leitner or Bobby Hurley or Jay Williams, that's who the other team is imagining themselves. They all want to be you. All want to be you. Every game is tougher. And the attention that you get is really, really hard sometimes to deal with. Man, I can't wait to be the number one thing in this town. Yes, you can. And then there's a reality check too. Hey, you could do whatever you wanted playing within a team concept last year. And you have a LeBron who's never played really the team. He has been the team concept. He is the system. So it's going to be fascinating to see how the LeBron James things works. I actually think that's part of the genius to what the Lakers are trying to do, but it could end very poorly. Like, the reason you bring in the veterans is all those guys can be given roles and can assume those roles because they know that's their best way to stay employed with LeBron James, Inc. And then those younger players, they're going to search for what their role would be playing with LeBron. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to tell, right? Like, if you're Lonzo Ball, He'll play without the basketball. He'll be a spot-up shooter with the basketball. He's got to be a shot creator for other people. Josh Hart's going to be defender and open shooter. That's it. Kuzma, you know, is Kuzma an off-the-bench four-man scorer? And can Brandon Ingram be a dynamic one-on-one playmaker? Does he play without the basketball? Does he play backup point guard? There's a lot of different... I think that's a guy who's going to be searching for a role. But this is a little bit... there's a truth serum when you play with LeBron James. It also points out that LeBron James is a good teammate. He's a better teammate than a Kobe, a better teammate than some of these other guys in terms of how he treats people around him. But it doesn't make it easy. Doesn't make it easy. I mean, it's known in the NBA that he's going to go to you in the first half, whether it's Chris Bosh or Kevin Love or whomever as a third option. He'll go, he'll find you when you're open, find your spot, deliver the ball on time and in rhythm. But you don't make it in the first half, he just ain't going to you anymore. Figure out a way to play without getting jump shots because he's not trusting you. He's not giving the ball. And that's the way he deals with just about everybody. I'll trust you to the point where I can't trust you. Once I can't trust you, boy, it'll take a lot of time for you to earn back my trust. There is a truth serum to play with LeBron James, and it's going to expose which one of these guys can, which one of these guys can't play. But then there's the question of, can he play within Luke Walton's system, or does he take over what Luke Walton's doing and do his own thing? Something that's really occurred for the most part in how he's played in the NBA. And it's been made only worse when he plays in Cleveland. Because he's been, both times he played in Cleveland, he was completely empowered by their franchises because they wanted to do everything they could to keep him. It wasn't as bad for the most part in Miami because he had Dwayne Wade, because he had Chris Bosh, and because Spoelstra was empowered by Pat Riley, but it wasn't like he was playing within some other foreign system. I think it's really going to be an interesting look. And the idea of, hey, it's not just the getting all the attention and being the talk of the NBA may seem like a good thing, and it probably is for business. But there's some parts to it which let's just be honest, some parts to it which can make it more difficult to do business, can make it more difficult to focus. And oh yeah, by the way, everyone is coming at you. Everyone's coming at you. Everyone's giving you their best shot. So that's the... all schedules are not the same. All records are not the same. And I mean, like, look, as we get ready for college football, we've always, you know, the expression is throw out the record books when your rival comes to town. We said this, we had Kirk Ferentz on yesterday. Kirk Ferentz is the head coach of Iowa. They play Iowa State. They say throw out the record books when they come to town. Then they play Northern Iowa, who, dude, that's a 1AA, what is it, FCS program. But Northern Iowa is going to give them everything they can because every kid in Northern Iowa wishes they were a Hawkeye. They do. And then they play Wisconsin, who's a rival. Those are back-to-back-to-back difficult games, even if, in and of itself, Iowa State is not the level of opponent of Wisconsin, and Northern Iowa is not an opponent the level of Iowa State. You use that in the micro, the macro is kind of is comparable in the same sense. Playing with LeBron is just different. It's not for everybody, and it will expose you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
So welcome in Dean Blandino, of course, former head of officiating with the National Football League. Now he basically does that for us here at Fox Sports, covering both college and NFL officiating. Obviously, Dean, everybody's talking about the new helmet rule. And for people who haven't been following, go back, what was it, about an hour ago? An hour ago, the NFL put out a statement in regards to the conference call. And basically, the statement was, hey, if you don't like the rule, tough. The rule is staying. But we do want to put a note in there that inadvertent contact is not a penalty. What's your reaction to the statement from the NFL today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not surprising. I think the language that has been in other rules like this, other player safety rules, has had, you know, a qualifier that says that it doesn't prohibit incidental contact. And so I think it makes sense to add that. I think it was intended, but it wasn't written explicitly like that. So I think it's a good thing, a good step, and then we'll see how it's going to be officiated the rest of the preseason.
What do you think of the rule?
You know, I think the intent of the rule is good. Anytime you're trying to prohibit contact with the head, I think that's good. I'm not crazy about how they implemented it. I think typically a rule like this, you vet it out, you have meetings with the Players Association, you get feedback from a lot of people. And this rule was really pushed through at the league meeting, which is not usual. It's kind of unusual for something like this. And now I think we're all playing catch up and trying to figure out how it's going to be officiated, how the players and coaches will adjust.
Is it safe to say that the whole intent of the rule is it's kind of like what Bill Belichick said, right? Like, it's not exactly how the rule is written, but Bill Belichick's like, look, if you see what you hit and you don't lunge forward, you're going to be fine. That's how we've always taught it. And this is an extreme kind of way of getting that out of the game. Isn't that the intent of the rule?
I think so. I think you're dead on with that. I think if you played football from a young age, you're taught to see what you hit, keep your head up. And they put tapes out. They had head coaches like Mike Vrabel and Todd Bowles and Doug Marrone put out position-specific tapes. And all you kept hearing if you watch these tapes are knees bent, pads low, head up. And that's what they're trying to get to. It's not always possible to have your head up when you're trying to get it across, you know, across the body of the runner. But if you do keep, like Coach Belichick said, if you can see what you hit and keep your head up, you are going to be, you know, you're going to be okay as it pertains to the rule. And it's just a safer way to tackle.
Look, here's where I do think that we lose. We TV creates this kind of illusion of how easy it is to see a guy and how he's hitting. Like, it's one thing to implement a new rule. It's another thing to implement a rule which is generally unpopular with the guys who you're trying to make those calls on. It's all, I think, in real time. Like, I guess I think the mistake a lot of these guys are making is they're reacting to a dip of a head, even if that's not how contact is actually made. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's the challenge from an officiating perspective is you have an official that's looking at it in real time, getting one shot, and so they can see the head dip, but then they have to figure out, okay, did he initiate with the helmet or did he initiate with a shoulder or a forearm? And was the helmet contact just incidental? And to be able to do that in real time, and a lot of times these are bang-bang plays, that's the challenge, and I think that's what we're seeing.
All right, so if you are an officiating crew and you're getting ready on a Sunday, what are you guys discussing?
Well, I think as it pertains to this rule, and I would imagine after this conference call, the direction to the game officials will be to call the clear-cut fouls. I think up until this point in the preseason, it's been if it's close and you think it might be a foul, throw the flag. And I think as we start to move toward the regular season, it's more going to be, look, if it's clear-cut, throw the flag. If you're not sure, don't throw the flag, and then they could always look at it on tape during the week, and if it's a fine or even a suspension, then the league will take care of it after the fact.
Yeah, and that's probably what's going to happen as the season goes on. But is there a sense that, hey, early in the season, we may not officiate as stringently as we will? Like, later in the year, they'll get a little bit more lenient and allow the fines to take place? Is that just what we imagine happening? Because that's kind of what happens in college basketball, freedom of movement, NBA with the hand-checking, where you're really, really strict early on, and then you just let them play later on in the year, letting the fines kind of take the place of it.
Yeah, that tends to happen. It tends to happen anytime you have something that's a point of emphasis where it's strictly enforced initially, and then as the season goes on, not that they're gonna ignore it, but you just don't see it as strictly enforced. I think that also has to do with the coaches and players adjusting and making the necessary changes, and that so you just don't have as many fouls to call. So I think it's a combination of those things.
Dean Blandino joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I want to ask you about RPOs as run pass options.
Yeah.
I know that it's a term that's misused by fans a lot, frankly by broadcasters and former players. But this comes from the college game, and the reason that the college game is so effective is offensive linemen can go up to 3 yards downfield without getting. Exactly. Without being an illegal man downfield, right? So if you're a linebacker, you can't tell based upon the blocking scheme anymore because you can get 3 yards downfield. In the NFL, it's what, a yard? It's supposed to be a yard, but it's really a yard to 2 yards. Is that about right?
Yeah, in the NFL, the rule states a yard, but typically you don't want to call it too tight. So you always tell the officials 2 yards is a rough guideline. You know, so that they're typically clearly beyond a yard when they get to 2 yards.
Was that always the case, or did it used to? Because again, this is we talk about when we grew up playing. When we grew up playing, you couldn't offensive linemen couldn't you know grab at all. It was more blocking, but they also couldn't go past the line of scrimmage at all.
Sure.
When did this rule evolve to being a little bit more like the college one?
Well, I think that rule has been in place for a long time. I think as you see, like you said, in the college game, there are advantages to that 3 yards. In the college game, you can block downfield if the pass doesn't cross the line of scrimmage. That's not the case in the NFL. So there's some built-in advantages to those RPO schemes in college. I think the NFL is starting to evolve and seeing some of the advantages, although the rules aren't as conducive to that. But again, I think it's from an officiating standpoint, that's always been the case. You don't want to call it too tight, so you want to give the lineman, you know, there's a little bit of wiggle room, but once they get to two, it's obviously a foul, and that's the one you want to get.
The other thing that's a comparable to this current one is, I guess what you would call the Tom Brady rule. There have been other quarterbacks that have been rolled up on, right? Carson Palmer got rolled up on by Kimo Van Olhoffen. But when Tom Brady tore his ACL, that's when the NFL chose to install the rule. Hey, can't hit a quarterback below the knee and above the head. How much, take me back, you were doing it at the time. How much pushback was there on that rule when it was put in place?
Yeah, there was a lot of pushback because you would hear from defensive players and defensive coaches, okay, if I'm on the ground, what do I do? Well, you can't lunge and drive your shoulder into the knee of the quarterback because that's a play that we've seen results in injuries. So you got to try to use your arms to grab, you know, wrap, that type of thing. So there's always pushback when these rules go into place. And then the players, they've done a great job of adjusting. I was with the NFL in 1995 when they expanded all the defenseless player rules, and people were like, well, how are we going to make plays on receivers downfield? And you just see them make the adjustment. And I think that's what eventually we're going to see with this helmet rule. They may tweak it here and there, but I think we'll see the players adjust and the officials adjust so they can call it consistently.
Look, I think there were two plays last year which pushes. I understand that a lot of people are like, hey, look, they didn't go through the proper process, the old vetting process for figuring out this new rule with the competition committee. I think the Shazier hit was a big one because you start. Here he is laying motionless. And now he's not in the NFL, and you're like, wow, that's bad. And it could have actually been worse. He could have died. And then I think in terms of the actual play, Marcus Williams whiffing on Stephon Diggs. How many times we see young players come in and just try and dip their head and not see what they hit, and that leads to an incredible play for the Minnesota Vikings. Is it fair that some of this is a reaction to those two prominent plays from last season?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you had those plays. I think you had the Trevathan hit early in the year against Green Bay. I think that was another one that generated some discussion. So I think you take all of that. But ultimately, what it came down to was the injury information. And what the health and safety group at the NFL presented at the league meeting was basically concussions don't happen when the contact is with the front of the face mask. That you see very few concussions when the force of the contact is with the head up. And that's kind of was the last straw in terms of putting something in that's going to incentivize players to keep their head up.
Yeah, it's a great point. The NFL is like, look, we already been sued for $1 billion. We're trying to protect you from you. It's really, we're not saying it's not hard, but we've been telling you your whole life to see what you hit. Now let's penalize you if you don't, because you don't want the ultimate penalty of permanent brain damage or being paralyzed. He's the former NFL VP of officiating. Of course, he's our VP of officiating. He's Dean Blandino. Dean, look forward to seeing you on our TV sets very, very soon. Week zero in college football. So it's like pre-boarding. You get on the plane before you get on the plane. This is college football before college football starts.
All right. Thanks, Doug.